They say for example, like for little kids are more engaged because they just have less time to interrupt. So like 3 5 minutes is a much greater
I like that.
I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I read it somewhere.
Sounds. It's one of those things that definitely sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get started with our Makoro sheet. Today we wanted to start up with the Or Sameach. Let's just get somebody to remind us of what we were discussing in the last year. The big topic was, what does it mean to consent to do something? We know that a get has to be given lertzono. At least that's the way the Rambam understands v'hem lo simtzichim beinav. It's more in Yevamos that seems to say the same thing. So a get has to be given volitionally. And it's a major and deep question. What does it mean to do something volitionally? And it's compounded by the fact that the halacha explicitly allows for coercion on gittin. So on the one hand, it has to be volitional. On the other hand, it can be coerced. How do you make sense of that? And the answer in the Gemara and the Rishonim is? Ned? Which means? Exactly. It could be coerced and volitional at the same time. That's the Torah's answer. Yes? Now, how did that make sense? That's the puzzle we've been trying to work out. So in the last couple of shiurim, I think we arrived at three separate pictures as to how this can be sorted out. What are the three approaches? Gosh. Give us one.
Okay. We don't need like some kind of like majority das. We just need some kind of das that we can tap into. So that's one answer.
Right. So you can imagine that a person's das is like a field of grass with each piece of das being a blade. So there are lots of blades of grass that are anti-divorce. But so long as you have one blade of grass or a clump of grass that is pro-divorce, then it's sufficient to say that he has das ligarish. That's the idea? Right. That's, I think, the picture that we were developing out of the Yachin. What? Not in this picture. Not in this picture. The Yachin idea is that so long as relative to some considerations, he wants a divorce, that would be enough to say that he has ratzon ligarish. Maybe we have to make it a little prominent. Maybe we have to mute out the other. Like we have to zoom in on this one blade somehow. But that's enough to get ratzon ligarish. It's a chiddush. I think it's a real chiddush in how we think of ratzon in halacha. Okay, what's another way of thinking about this, Benji?
We're just referring back to his initial disposition. Again, that he has a disposition to follow the ratzon of Hashem, and he's just kind of off course a little bit. So just referring back to that original disposition. So it is a thought that there's a disposition in more supply in this case.
So meaning that we know his true nature?
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, or wanting to express the true nature. So it's already, meaning he already has the das, and wondering, well, we put my thoughts on our thoughts on me, he's just expressing that true nature.
Is that a model that we saw? That's a little more complicated. Hold up on that for a second. Josh, what are the other models you had in mind?
One, like David was just mentioning, that it's some kind of like majority thing, that meaning, because for most of his life, we know that he's been Jewish and that he wants to be Jewish and stuff. So while we have this contradiction right here between him wanting to do, like, you know, following the Torah, like he normally does, and this one case where he hates his wife, so we have to resolve that contradiction. So we're going to resolve it based on, you know, either like the thing that, you know, dictates most of his life or like the majority and stuff like that.
So, Benji, I think that's what you're getting at also. The idea is that, no, really, it's not enough to have one blade of grass that's pro-Gershon. You have to say that in order to say that he has das ligarish, the lion's share of his rutzon is pro-gerushin. You have to say something. That's the only way you could have Ratzon. So first of all, it's a very different picture of Ratzon, right? We have a contradiction between his wanting to be a good Jew and his not wanting to divorce his wife. And we have to impose some sort of order on those contradictory desires. Then what justifies us adjudicating in favor of the Ratzon to be a good Jew? So we have to say further here something along the lines of
majority of his life.
Or that's a more profound, that's a more important commitment of his than his minor commitment to not divorce his wife, right? So there's an ikar and a tafel, and we have good reason or good basis or warranted in privileging his rotzelios miyisrael over ein rotzeligarish. Now the chiddush of the maritats, which we saw, is that the privileging rotzelios miyisrael is not absolute. It's a case-by-case determination. In a case of a mumar, we're not justified in privileging his rotz elios miyisrael. In a case where we know that he's mumar l'das acheres, we're not able to be kofahim because there may be the lion's share of his rotzon commitment is not to be a good Jew. All right? That's the second model we saw. The third model is, Josh?
Differentiating between like your intellectual, you know, moral beliefs and decisions versus your more emotional, I don't know how to say this at all, but like based on your more emotional like reactions.
It means the difference between your rational commitments and your desires. And so the thought is, given that this guy is Rosh Elios Miyisrael, so he has a rational commitment to prioritizing the Torah's commandments. And that is a more important commitment when we're assessing his das than some desire that he has to remain married to his wife. Anybody see that way of thinking about it? So it's not that it's necessarily more of a fundamental commitment of his, but whenever we have a dispute between someone's rational commitments and their desires, will favor the rational commitment over the desire. Got the idea, Josh? Something along those lines?
Makes you like think differently about like what sinning is and stuff. And,
what?
Like every time you sin, meaning you're going after your, in that case,
desires.
It's like you never have that something you sin. I don't know, it's like you sin.
Isn't that Ned's blurry quote from Emergence of Ethical Man that he dropped?
There's the
rationality of the
Rosh Hashanah. It's like the wrestling top kind is the material side, or that you can have. It's not like when you're sitting there, you're choosing one thing or another. It's that you have could have two or something at the same time, just one.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, before the Tanya, the Rambam says things along those lines, right? It's like this conflict between what you know is right and what your desire. Somebody mentioned last year the idea, like the Rambam and Marnavuchim seems to say this about the Chet Adei Tzedas, even. Ned, you said that, right? Tov and Ra versus like MS and Sheker, different between rational knowledge and desires. Okay, so that's where we left off. We're trying to figure out what does it mean to do something on your own Ratzon in the context of Kfiya. Zev, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I don't know if it's maybe the same thing or something different, but it's just the same as saying like if we gave him like a trolley problem type thing, like, you know, you want to, whatever, listen to the Chabonim more, you know, whatever, not divorce, right, whatever, like, is that, like, if he's not in the throes of his passion, whatever, he would decide
To
follow the Chachamim.
Correct.
And it's just like,
if he was thinking rationally,
yeah,
he would favor the Chachamim. There's just something impinging on his rational deliberation. That's the thought. There are different ways of thinking about that. You could think about it if he were more impartial, right? If you asked him to step out of his body and say, which of these is the right thing to do? He would always say ligarish.
That's also
like, yeah, all these things, right? I mean, the whole sig is a chiddush, because you're saying that someone's ratzon could be contrary to what they truly seem to desire. That's why there's a puzzle here. Look, I think the Alshich, just going back to the Alshich for a second, the Alshich is clearly saying something along those lines also. He's saying your true nature, it could be different than the way you understand, like than the way you understand it. That's a non-trivial view of human nature. Right? Like you're, as a Jew, the Maal Sheikh thinks that your teva is to do what the Torah says. And when you're not feeling that, you're out of touch with your true self. Well, good thing Tani's here. Tani, you don't have thoughts on this?
On the Al Sheikh and the Arsenet.
It's on the Al Sheikh.
I mean, it's a little bit chassidus, which is that was a little bit nice, right? He's a
tzvah
guy.
He's a tzvah guy. Yeah.
Pnimi is a Torah. It's not, you know.
Say more.
I mean, the Al Sheikh is basing, you know, his opinion on a.
I think there's a lot of Hasidus cultural appropriation. You know, anytime somebody sees something that's interesting now, people say, like, oh, it's Hasidic. It's Hasidish, right? It's like, you're like, why could that be Hasidic? Like, this is like, you know, the Mekubalim have been saying this for, you know,
like, he uses the word like
1,000 years before Hasidus existed. You're like, oh, that's like a nice Hasidic shot.
So perhaps I was culturally appropriating, but he used like the words Kripah and other things that, you know, make it, you know, at least. Those words kind of jumped out to me. Kripa and then...
yeah, well, it's Kabbalah Sa'ari. You don't need Hasidus for Kabbalah Sa'ari, right?
Kabbalah Sa'ari. Yeah.
What? Yeah. Right.
Barbanel is a good thing.
All right, so let's look now. We said we would start up today with the Oros Hameach. So let's turn to the Oros Hameach. Josh Shapiro is going to take us to the Oros Hameach. Correct, Josh? That's what you're signed up for today?
Sure.
Okay, so there
are you including the Al Sheikh as an approach?
The Al Sheikh has an approach? No.
Yeah.
I think the Al Sheikh is just giving us a reason why we prioritize a person wanting to do what Judaism says he should do.
That's just a preliminary step
to, I think it's just a way of explicating the idea why we would favor his road to Leos Misrael over his explicit statement that he doesn't want to give his wife a get. And the reason is because that's more in line with his true nature, something along those lines.
Isn't that another approach?
You could, that's what Benji was trying to say, but I think that's just, you could view that as a version of
31.
Well,
it's a version of number two. Is it like the majority of like your life decisions or like your true nature? Like,
yeah. It's just a reason to favor the.
It's like a stronger version of the one way to breath approach. Like you have that aspect of yourself that wants to do.
No, because the point is it's a more fundamental, like we're saying something that all things considered, your true nature, your true desire is to do what the Torah says. Welcome back, by the way. You're away, right?
Yeah.
How was?
Good. Yeah.
All around?
Roman Forums. Then can you say, though, that's a better approach than the blade of grass? Is just a little weird to me because of what we know about like psychology. And if I tell someone, like, I don't know, don't think about divorcing your wife, then he's going to think about divorcing his wife.
Okay.
Got a blade of grass. Like, it doesn't seem like it's so.
Right. This was an objection that somebody had in sheer. From this corner of the room, Josh, was it what your objection or?
I don't know.
That there's got to be relative to some consideration, right? That there's at least some consideration relative to which he wants to divorce his wife in all cases.
Right. Are we looking at
like, no matter how great your marriage is, there's going to be something. But maybe no. Maybe the answer is no. Maybe, like, even if there's something that bothers you, that's not.
I think some people would answer. It has to be like a halakhically
said. Yeah, it has to register. Yeah, so I think you could give Zev's answer. So there's
actually have to like pontificate on it. It's not just like the idea pop in your head.
Correct. It has to have some. The blade has to have root. Has to be a live blade.
Interesting.
Not just a seed. Yeah. Okay, so Josh Shapiro is going to take us to the Oros Hameach. Did you guys read through the Oros Hameach? You understand what he's saying?
There's a bunch of stuff.
Okay, so you could tell us all the bunch of things that he's saying.
No, yeah, some of the bunch of
stuff. Well, some of the bunch of stuff. Yeah, okay. Okay, good. It's a very tough Oros Hameach. In general, I find Rav Simcha's Hebrew very difficult.
It's very long.
It's very long, but let's see, what's he trying to say? Like, you want to tell us outside what the big picture?
Outside the big picture thesis.
Then you can take us through the important parts inside.
It's kind of like
you know, you can take the Rambam, if you take the Rambam at face value, that can kind of lead you to, let's say, assume that in a lot of cases we're, you know, presuming that, let's say, somebody really does want to divorce their wife, or that we are really, you know, doing what is the right thing for him. And here, like, I think the Yorsamach in like a couple ways limits that claim, kind of like qualifies it, tones it down a little bit, whether it be, let's say, saying that not every person is a Rotsa Leum Yisrael, or that,
like we saw in the Maritats.
Yeah, or there is such a case where somebody could be onus in this case. Like the Rambam's claim is that there's no way it's onus, and I think later on the Yorsamach claims that there could be a situation where somebody is an onus.
Okay. So let's see. Those are two things you think are important?
Two of the things, I thought.
It's hard to agree with that, but important pieces of the Ursa Math.
Not sure. We have a lot of very interesting things.
All right, so let's go through it then. Josh, you guys, where do you want to start from?
Start from
Beginning?
Yeah, I'll go with my money. Give you the
show. Okay, I go. So basically it's on page 17 in the source sheet.
Yeah, so the Hagam Maimonides said that when it comes to somebody who converts to Islam, you can be kochen otel lehotzi, according to, let's say, the secular government, like use them.
Yeah.
So it's about, even though we say that with the mukhlaf, you're not able to force him to divorce, who don't finish it, ain't not doing the, that's only in a case. That's only in a case where, let's say, you know, the halacha does not permit to do kofin.
Okay.
Rak mishin deru mukla. Ava misha who mehanach shekofin otam ahotziam vada digam mukhlafin kofin otam. The halacha. So basically, in that, basically, that the Hagam Maimonides would even agree that in a case where, you know, just like in a, by a Jew, you're able to in kiddin cases be kofin. So too with a non-Jew, in cases that are kiddin, you could be kofin. That, you know, just because he's, let's say, some in the halacha within, like the widespread halacha, is that I guess even in the case of Shaloka, then because he's a non-Jew, we're just gonna,
right. I mean, the mere fact that he converted to a different religion is a reason for us to be kofel agarish.
Yeah.
But in any event, even though Gos Maimonios, who generally opposes that theory, that conversion per se is not a reason to compel divorce. It's the chiddush, by the way, right? The husband converts to a different religion. So there's 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch whether we force him to divorce his Jewish wife. But even that Gos Maimonides, who thinks that it's better, all things considered, for the wife to remain married to the husband who was mishtamid, he would agree that if there's independent halachic basis for kriya, we'd be kofin the mishumud. That's the Orsa Mass point, right? Now, that's obviously opposed to the Maritats. That's the next line. I'm the Mishnah Maritat, Irer Alza.
Yeah. The aim coping will have in the house coping the
balance. So why does the Maritats disagree?
Because he's Lord of the Leum Yisrael.
Correct. Because once he's Lord of the Leum Yisrael, you lose the presumption that he really wants the Shema Devei Chachamim. And the rest of this paragraph is just quoting the Maritats. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So nothing important there other than what we saw. Well,
yeah,
that's the Maritats. Okay, so then what's the important part?
Second one?
Yep.
So there's a section where he has a couple sections. There's some stuff about road zoning, and there's also a section where he, section that begins like, I got that snuff up, for the bottom.
Yeah.
So I thought it's interesting because it's,
I will just point out in the highlighted section, bottom 17 to 18, you want to tell us what's going on in this highlighted section, the Chor Akasha?
This is kind of like discussing like what Tosfos says about whether you, like, why, if we have Agam Hunse Gam Ramakne, why do we also need the other Yerusha to Dirachom, or the Pasuk,
Nichle Dwab, like Kapara?
Yeah, like, why do we need that if we just have Agam?
Right, pointing out the differences between the sugyas, that we have two separate bases for kviya. There's agavonse gemara makni, and then separately the idea of mitzvah shmo derech chachamim. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. He also says here, by the way, he points out, anybody catch this rotzani discussion, which we're going to get into a little more deeply later on?
Yeah, it's like
in the case of like Torah Zavin, you wouldn't have to say Rotani, but
correct. In the case of Kofen as Abal Kadesh.
Yeah.
If a woman hired people to beat up a man to consent to agree to marry her, and the husband agreed, the kedushin is valid even if the husband did not say rotzani.
That's a little more complicated though, because he might technically be saying rotzani. He says her kedushin.
So maybe. So what does he say here? He says, "Al korchin hu inyan acher rotzani is not about consenting." His point is that rotzani is not about consenting, but rather it's about doing the action of tzivoy to the edim. So that's something we saw in our own suggestions, but Hermir Simcha has that suggestion here. Okay?
It also might be about like most of Moda.
Yeah, like that's the Pashpashan, the Gemara even. Okay, so where do you want to take us to in your analysis?
Well, I see some other lines.
We could skip over. I'm not so wedded to it. I will just say that Ramir Simcha thinks that consent under duress genuinely gets you consent.
Yeah.
Like he just thinks when you analyze someone's mind, if I'm consenting because I want the pain to stop, that's genuine desire to divorce, right?
So, and he says you can kind of like circumvent that though. You're the person being lashed, you know that like they really want you to like say I want you guys to stop because that's consenting, but you can kind of, I forget exactly how I phrased it, you can kind of get around that if you like have deep down that you don't want to, like if you know their trick basically, then you can get around it and it wouldn't be considered a good get.
Does it say that?
I think that's the I got the asking about section.
Let's look at this paragraph that I'm highlighting right now for a second. Miata nisbonin gavik fios bezdin. Everybody see that paragraph? Anybody know what's going on here? Sorry, do you know what's happening in this paragraph? Miata nisbonin.
Yeah, this would be a very interesting claim by him that they sin only force people when they think it will be effective. And if they know in advance somehow that it will not be effective at all, then it is possible for them to force people. Forcing, like Fia or Malthus or whatever, is only a tool to encourage good behavior. It's never just like a policy or punishment. Or just, yeah, I thought that was a very interesting claim. They sin can only act in sheer case where it's clear that it will be effective.
So say more generally, what's striking him? What's the chiddush here, and what's
the limiting of power base? Based forbidden to act in cases where they won't be affected,
and not every case will work.
Well, let's say it in the positive first. What's the positive chiddush here? Are you all familiar with the concept of kfiyas bezdin to perform a mitzvah? No.
That's about it.
Well, not just for tzedakah, but for all mitzvahs. There's a din that bezdin is kofa. The Gemara in Ksivis, for example, talks about build a sukkah, shake lulav. There's a din that bezdin could be kofa you to perform a mitzvah say. No one's been forced to perform a mitzvah say yet, so stay tuned. But that's a din. That's a din that there's kfiya on mitzvah say. Build a sukkah, shake lulav, whatever it is.
Have you ever forced anybody to do a mitzvah saseh?
All the time. That's what I do in my free time.
Isn't that what happened to kids? Well, hopefully you're not getting them to do it. But of course.
Who's the them?
The kids. Kids. Where's the kids?
Ask Chinuch or something?
Yeah.
What kind of force we could make him do for not say like physical?
Yeah, like Mario talks about Makino, so I'll just say an off show. Yeah. For any essay.
What about the good?
Yeah, they're supposed to do that. Right, that's called Kfiya Kfiya Mitzvos.
So assuming we're in a society where none of them had power that we wanted to, wouldn't that greatly limit free will? Because like we have a choice to do our mitzvah or not to do it, but if the society is structured in a way that we actually think is ideal, everybody's gonna be enough to not do it.
Okay, well.
Well, so let me just get it. That's good, Charlie. Just put that on char tube, the byline. First of all, I want to point out your point is basically what's going on in this sugya, right? Like that's what's going on in the test case of Kfiya and Gershon. So I think the interesting point here is that Meir Simcha is saying that it's not an exception. It's the same principle of Kfiya Amitzaseh that he's connecting in the highlighted section here. That I think is the big chiddush, that he's saying the mechanism for Kfiya on Mitzvah Saseh in general is the same as the mechanism for Kfiya on Gerushin. Why? Because you're just getting the guy to do what he ought, wants to be doing. So the same thing that makes Kfiya on Gerushin Kedin a kosher get, a get mirsono, that also explains why Bezin is kofe on Mrs. Sase.
Where's this connection to the other
people? What?
Where does he make this connection?
And the part that I'm highlighting. Let's see. Let me atan is bonin. That's how you want to read that for us?
Yeah. So, atan is bonin, you got like Theos Bezin.
Go back a little bit just to motivate this for Josh more, because Josh is going to give us trouble if we don't ground it a little further. So he says, he points out that the Gemara is Medama Unsa Dinafshe La Unsa Dalma.
Yeah.
Shein Afkamina,
the Gemara of Akinyan, Beinim Hu Machazir Mabakis Babal Hamaos Bibuan, Beinim Acher Ba, Lekofehu, Verodehu, Yusuf, Pachin, Tepeso Akimok.
So once we say Agavonte Gemara Makni, there's no difference whether you are begging the buyer to pay you money for the house because you need the money, because you're so in need of the cash that you're compelled to sell, or whether somebody twists your arm and you want the pain to go away, so you agree to sell. And there's no difference between those two cases. Okay?
Yeah. The Ulam Zadako Hagavna Shiodea Shim Lo Yikne Ahanas Yisarei Yisurim Kashim Avor Chein Moker. A bit of like a game theory going on. So this is a case where you have some, where the bug guy who's coming to the Chalupa's oven. So the seller knows that if he refuses, the guy will beat him up anyway.
Right.
Just out of revenge. And therefore, since he knows that the beatings will happen no matter what he does, well, even if he doesn't sell, therefore he will sell to cave in to prevent the beating. That's what he says at the end there.
Okay. So here's the connection, right? From Talyub is Avin, Zvini Zvini, Kfiya, right? So he's saying, Miyatan is Bonin, Gabi Kfiya is Bezdin.
Right. Now you're going to contrast the Allah to the beast. So Gabe Miyatan is Bonin, Gabi Kfiya speaks.
In general, not just for Gittin, for Ases, Lavin, like when Bezdin forced you to do something. Hooray. So his point here is that Chiyuv Malkus in general is punitive. And that's limited to 39 Malkios. It's finite. It's not Achatet Nafsha. Okay. But Rak Ba'omrimlo.
Rak Ba'omrimlo Kanye Milsa the Asher B'yadah. So in cases where you say, go fulfill that interview that you're able.
Exactly. That's Kfiyan Aseis. There we have a special thing that we coerce him until he, you know, his heart will go out. Why?
And then, so the aim based on a high
Okay, so 1 second. So he's saying that Bezdin, in all those cases of kviyas anase, like Nachshoni was saying, there still is free will. Bezdin's not the one who's compelling him to do it. Rak ihu ba'atzma mechayev es nafsho. Bezdin is just getting you to realize, to like trigger your self motivation to do it. Diviyado b'chol shah lahasir mimenu es hamar hazeh. Because you have the free will to get the pain to go away. That's the trick. I mean, that's the mechanism through which Amir Simcha thinks the Agavon Sigamar Machni works. He's saying it's not just for commercial transactions. This is the theory for Kviya Mitzvos in general. Josh, you see that? Okay. Sheyachbots.
All right, so how did he get rid of the...
Sheyachbots l'kayim adavar. Because now the guy genuinely wants to do the mitzvah say because he wants the pain to go away.
Yeah.
Vidav yadi.
All right, so that's the positive finish. And the other side...
Correct, that's...
The ilu have a yadi beast in the vada lo yiratza the galia kamayu mo kamishmaya shlo yet elas ben kiyasam yimso natural alter alo as are you after the harim yabala?
This is really big chiddush. What's the claim?
That if basically were to know in advance with certainty that he will not be then, and there will be no to elas from their being then to the guy himself, then it's forbidden for them to be.
Yeah. Because the only basis for kviya is the basis for kviya is not punitive. It's not, oh, you're not doing a mitzvah say, so we're gonna punish you, and we're only gonna remove the punishment once you are in good standing. It's to create a incentive for you to want to do the mitzvah. The incentive being you want the pain to cease. But if the Bezin knows that you'll never consent, you'll never be moved through all the pain and suffering to do the mitzvah, then they have no right to coerce you in the first place. That's the chiddush of Meir Simcha. It's a huge chiddush in the powers of Kofanosa Mistase. Somebody see that? Oz hayu asurim laharim yad alav. They're not allowed to raise their hand on him. Gosh, you have a question on this?
Yeah, so one question is, I mean, we know about Yerushin.
Well, let me just say one more thing. Like, you could see here, he's taking this narrow halacha about kviya on Gerushin and Talyuva Zavin Zvini Zvini, and he's expanding it to the theory of kviya on mitzvos. That's the move, right? This interpretation of human motivation. That so long as you motivate yourself for some reason, regardless of whether that reason is the external pressure, that's considered you're acting on your own Ratzon. But go ahead, Josh.
In according to Rambam, we have a special pasuk that like we need like some sort of extra Ratzon by Gerushin or whatever. I mean, this is not saying anything like that, right? I mean, within this formulation, meaning,
what is the Rambam saying? You need a special pasuk for Gerushin?
For meaning, isn't it because like the Rambam reads Emotions
for Ratzon now?
What? Right, but I'm saying that to me seemed like there was some kind of special din of Ratzon by Gerushin. But once we're creating it with everything else, then it's not really there. Anytime you beat someone up, like being either then you need.
Well, I guess the question is, this gets to Nachshoni's point, does a mitzvah have worth if it was done under duress?
No, but
just like an Aveira is less significant if you were forced to do it. So maybe a mitzvah is less significant if you were forced to do it. And the answer is like, no, you're not really forced. You were just given the motivational background to decide to do it.
So there's no difference between Gerushin and like that. There is no special pasuk of Ratzon on Gerushin.
Well, there is a special pasuk of Ratzon for Gerushin.
But like he doesn't really change it. That's, I don't know. What's different given that we have that pasuk?
You might say the Ratzon for Gerushin is different than the Kavana, Ratzon that you need for other mitzvahs still. Just Meir Simcha is saying that in the same way that Kfiya could achieve the Ratzon for Gershin, so too Kfiya could achieve whatever Bechira is needed for Mitzvah Seh.
Kind of sounds like to me like they're kind of equivalent.
They're equivalent in the sense that they could both be triggered by external coercion.
Okay.
Josh, you have a...
Just to clarify, so in the case of Mitzvah Aseh, the reason why you can do Kriya, like do Mako until he dies, is because it's just a punishment. Masha'in came, like it's a punishment, not necessarily an incentive.
And Mitzvah Aseh, or... No, it's not a, it's not a punishment.
Then why can you...
If you knew that he was going to be Moser Nafsho to die rather than, well,
also in Mitzvah.
If you knew that he was going to be Moser Nafsho to die rather than perform the Mitzvah Aseh, you have no right to coerce him. Because the coercion is just to get him to do the Mitzvah. If you know he's not going to do the Mitzvah, you can't compel him. Right, Zacharia?
So I should say Nafsho is Ad Meloa Bechla.
Correct. Yeah, weaken him. Yeah, it's not Bechla. Okay, so... Let's carry on in the... Any questions on this part of the Or Sameach? Kara?
It seems like a... Like I was saying before about the game theory. It seems like a bad strategy. You know? A basin should pre-commit to just beat him no matter what so that he can keep in.
One more time?
As in... Or Sameach playing this game. I'm like, okay, if basin knows that... I guess we'll come later when, like... Well, he knows that basin knows that he's not going to give in.
Right. Like, then he should really just ask to die.
Admit, like, we're beating you up.
By the way, you could see how this could be an important theory for Mesiras Nefesh, for Averos Chamuros and things like that. If you think that coercion under duress ultimately generates Das, so you could see why in certain cases it's crucial that there be a din of Pihar Glayabar. Right, but let's go on to the game theory part of this. So Hagia Batzmecha. So Josh, you want to take us back to Hagia Batzmecha here?
Yeah.
Is that what you wanted to pick up?
Thanks.
Okay, go.
Hagia Batzmecha in Zot Yashiv Elimo. Halo Bishrim Open. Will you scam the dato Bigmor Belagarish Kedei Rehinat Selman Amakot? So if we know he's not going to give in. Kila Shiodeya Shehaskim Ato Elibo. So kind of like he knows this halacha that we just said, and he knows that if he just will never give in, then they can't hit him in the first place.
Correct. Meaning he, what's rational, what he should do then is that he should make up his mind that he'll never, ever, 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 ever give in. Because if he has conviction that he'll never, ever, ever give in, then there's no basis for kviya. Right?
Yeah.
So if he does that, Adraba.
So in this case, like meaning if he does somehow end up divorcing her in this case. It's only through honest.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good.
Doesn't that disprove his point is that I never going to divorce them, therefore they can't hit me. But then he does end up divorcing. So like
sit in?
He's saying if I just never have a desire to divorce her, then they can't hit me.
Right.
Okay, they decide to hit him anyway. And then he ends up being wrong and he ends up divorcing them, let's say. And or something that is saying that
correct. Why it would be a plus.
His whole thesis was undermined by the fact that he did end up divorcing. Like I thought it only works, let's say, in the theoretical that he can, let's say, you know, just tell them before they start hitting him that you can't hit me because I know the halacha. Or saying now, even once they start hitting him, he does, let's say, give in, but that das would not be good.
I guess the thought
why
is that
das not be good.
Right.
That he decided that he's not going to do it. So what, even if he ends up doing it, obviously, that's not going to change the fact that he had Das not to do it.
No, but how do you explain the difference between this case and the other case, huh? Like, one can get lines above.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, because here he's like, putting his feet down, like, firmly deciding, like, I'm never going to do it. Then.
No, this is every place.
I don't like a one dog, maybe.
Yeah, like that.
In advance.
Yeah.
That like I'm never like my consent is no good. And
yeah,
that's a way of thinking about it. It is a little puzzling to my mind. I would say, though, it's what he's trying to say is that there are cases where the husband could dig in and say that he'll never, ever, ever consent. And then that would prohibit the Bezdin from coercing him. That's the claim here, right? I think it's puzzling because I don't see why it should puzzle the Bezdin, why it should block the Bezdin from coercing him. At most, it would just mean that if the Bezdin knew that he'll never give in, they're not allowed to compel him. But everyone changes their mind under duress.
Yeah, of course, you know what that means. I didn't know someone's
not going to
give in.
Right. Right. I agree. That's why this thing is very puzzling to me.
Yeah, pre-facto.
He's just saying that he'll never give in, but he'll have weakness of the mind and, you know, once the torture begins. Well, yeah, there are people like that. Josh,
we definitely can't know that before.
Right. I mean, why not do the kfiya and then see if the.
He doesn't break.
You can't know that he won't break.
Yeah.
Oh, so in that case, they do it. Only if they happen to know for sure. Like,
what
happened
if they know for sure?
I don't know. He held up a gun and said, hey, so say I'll get myself or something. I don't know. Like a witch test. If she sings, she's not a witch. And if she floats, she's a witch. So she kills her. Like, just hit him anyway. If he gets in, it's his rough spell.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, but if he doesn't get in, then you're out.
Well, you didn't finish being here.
Oh, I don't think it goes against the basis.
They all have the
So this is a bit of a puzzle to me.
Can you explain what exactly the puzzle means?
Yeah. Sorry, you want to explain the puzzle?
The first man seems to take this guy's pre-commitment very seriously. That pre-commitment is, I'm never going to give in. Then, generally, based it takes that seriously. They're like, oh, wow, he's really never going to give in. And therefore, we're only tofa al mitzvahs so that he does mitzvahs. If you're not going to do mitzvahs, we can't be tofa. I think our difficulty is, I think it's one, is like, why do we believe him? Why do we have confidence that he won't give in even under duress?
Right.
I have a further question on this one. Like, the Orthodox seems to say, and then even if he does give in under duress, it was not hell.
Right.
Which is the context we said earlier, that a decision made under duress, well, you wanted it, you know. Like you're seeing.
Right. The way I understood his point at the beginning was that you're under a lot of pain. The only way to release the pain is to consent to divorce. That's a valid consent to divorce, even if you're only consenting to stop the pain. And now he seems to be saying, like, no, there's a case where you could consent to the divorce, but you're not to get the pain to stop, but where you're not actually consenting to the divorce. Right? It's a bit strange. We could think more about it. Want to read this passage one more time? Let's say.
Hear what Noah suggested.
Yeah. Let me just think. One second. What's troubling to Meir Simcha is that he thinks that the kfiya is only legitimate if the Bezdin thinks that the husband will capitulate under pressure to divorce his wife volitionally. But he says, oh, but how do you know that? Right, maybe the Bezdin shouldn't be allowed to coerce him because maybe this husband is stubborn and will never consent. But maybe in that case, the kfiya is not warranted. That's his. But again, I just think that's wrong because, as Charlie was saying, you don't know that he won't break. So be kofa him, and then if he breaks, he breaks, and then you'll find out whether the kfiyah is warranted. If he doesn't break, then he's not going to give a get. So this suggestion of the Arsameach seems a little overly clever to my mind. Josh, do you have an answer to this?
I mean, I was just saying, I'm not sure. I mean, I think all he's saying about Beijing not being able to cope him is just in the case where it happens to be where they know for sure he won't change his mind, then it's usher. I think that's what he's saying. I think in any other iffy case, I mean, it's not usher.
When do you ever know that he'll never change his mind? I mean, this is a hypothetical.
In a theoretical case where you never change his mind, then it's usher, then you're hanging for no reason. But any other time, like, I think Charlie's right. Like, yeah, you do beat him and see what happens.
Okay.
Maybe his track record helps.
This guy.
Yeah.
He never breaks.
That's smart or something like that. When he doesn't give it, follow his oral.
Yeah. It's like, what?
Who's Ned Stark?
That's not like how big he is.
Who is he?
Not that I've seen it, obviously. Okay. I have friends who told me about it.
Got it.
You have friends who've seen.
Okay, wait, do not. Well, I read the books. The point is, the guy's track
record. Right, he's not going to give in.
Consistent with his value.
And great. He won't break.
It's very rare to find
it. Right. Okay. I mean, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what Ramir Simcha does with it. But, Zachar, you have a suggestion from Noah?
So, what Noah suggested was that. Maybe we got the original part of those map wrong. That when someone caves under duress, that's not expression of full Ratzon. Really, Ratzon is something, you know, sort of esoteric and hidden, and we can't really just determine it from his actions. But we would apply that principle in typical and stop cases of Dharma Shri Levi Gandhvaram, and then your actions are full expression. You say Ratzani, you do give the guy, that's a fine expression. But maybe when you actually verbally and maybe very actively protest in advance, then we lose our Dharma Shri Levi Gandhvaram. And then even when he's going through the motion to go and get later, we have to approach it.
Is that consistent with the textual evidence in the Arsameach about all the stuff that Agarwal Sigam Ramakni in the beginning?
Well, I think the different factor is the factor of initial strong protest.
Like a moda. That's
yeah, exactly.
Okay. Does his hypothetical here require a strong protest, or it's just that he's gomer belibo that he's never going to break? I thought it was just that he's gomer belibo that he's never going to break, not that he makes some sort of moda. But I could be wrong.
Maybe you differentiate.
Right, he says imzos yashiv elibo halo b'shum ofen lo yuskan b'daito ligmar legarish k'teli natsam enamakos. Doesn't sound like it's a verbal proclamation, such as a moda. It sounds that it's just his inner conviction, like Ned Stark.
Okay.
I don't know.
How do you know what's in somebody's heart?
Right. That's Charlie's point.
Right.
So it's only in a case when you have reason to assume that you won't
do. Okay. So you know that this guy has superhuman willpower. So what is it? What does Amir Simcha do? Let's grant him this piece of analysis. What does he do with it, Josh? So he thinks this solves a problem about the different elements in the Sugya in Bava Basra and Kiddushin about Agamot Sigam Ramakni versus Mitzvah Shmoda B'Chachamim, Nichole, Lahavle Kapara, etc. So what's his move?
Don't think I actually understood.
Okay, but you still like the Arsameach.
Yeah, well, until that part.
Okay. So he thinks that there's some problem in the cases of the guy who's never going to consent. Right? We don't know what exactly it is, but we know the Arsameach thinks that there's a problem in the case of the guy who has strong conviction. Maybe there's no permission to be kofahim in such a case. So he says, that's why you have this second consideration. Let's see. L'chein Mishani. Scott, you want to take us to this? L'chein Mishani.
Maybe if you go 2 minutes earlier, I think you might have been pointing out the same.
Yeah, starting from where?
Maybe have a bunch of Levian and Barim. The Minha Inyan Hagaloi from the outward action. I know Yasha Amar. Odem Hafia She'en Rosa. The initial protest. Ulasov Adeh Kriya Rosa. after the recovery that the FIA brought in, we come up with a pure omer that the FIA government of Magarish believes Shalim. But to lose his oven, that will unsay government of Magarish. I think he's saying the opposite of what I was saying.
Okay.
Anyway, okay.
What's the problem? What are you saying? L'chein.
Okay. Yeshani, if you show the mitzvah l'shmoa, one second.
Pretty tough or some math. No? Anybody feel like they got a handle of it preparing it? No.
When I'm reading it, I sometimes felt like he was like the thing that it seems like he's saying is like obvious, and he's saying it in a way that makes it feel like a fetish. So I felt like I wasn't understanding what he was saying.
You were understanding.
I don't think so.
Okay, so how I read this phrase, L'chein Mishani, Mishun the Mitzvah Shmoa Devei Chachamim.
Okay, Mishani, Mishun the Mitzvah Shmoa Devei Chachamim, Moshe here to read them. The Iker HaRatzon B'Lev HaPisraeli, HaRotz HaLev B'Kor HaShem, Yivosa, L'chaim Chukai Torah, Rachsha Taiva, Masha Libo, Hashah, Lo Yukol HaNatzeh Reiko, Es Kokos Kumiyosav,
we know what this phrase means. He thinks you needed a second din. Structurally, it's very clear what he's doing. He's trying to say, look, is not sufficient because of some paradox of the guy who doesn't, the Ned Stark example. So you need some other element. And that other element is the Rambam's Chiddush of everybody wants to do what's right. That's the structure of his argument. But Agavon Tzumachni works in most cases for the guy who's going to capitulate at the end. Forced consent is consent. But there are the cases of the guys who are going to hold out. If they're going to hold out, that makes the kfiya wrongful in some way. We're not sure exactly why, but Mayor Simcha thinks so. So you need this other consideration. And he cites the Rambam that everybody wants to do mitzvah shmoa devei chachamim. And he gives us, like the Alshich, he gives us an explication. He has a theory for what the Rambam's saying, right? That's the highlighter phrase. L'chein mishani mitzvah shmoa devei chachamim. But I want us to understand, how does he understand? How is he interpreting the Rambam's position? Let's try to read it again. L'chein Mishani.
L'chein Mishani, Mishum the Mitzvah, L'shmo Adir Chachamim, Kmo Shekir Shavrinu.
That's the Rambam. Rabbeinu is the Rambam.
Yeah. The Ikar HaRatzon, B'Leva Pe'Yisraeli, Rote Lelech, Kor Sashem, U'Mitzvosa, O'Chaim Kukeh Torah.
So that's not really a sentence, is it? The Ikar HaRatzon, B'Leva Pe'Yisraeli, Harotza lelech b'toras Hashem u'mitzvosa b'kayim.
Is harotza a qualifier? Has been made Israeli rich? Has been not a mumar number?
Oh, I think it's like is too light.
What?
You can translate it as is too light.
There shouldn't be a hey there.
No, I think it's qualifying. See, it's later on that a mumar will not be satisfied with this little underdog.
Maybe.
Like a card-carrying Orthodox Jew, by all intents and purposes, you know.
No, notice ikar harotzon. Why does he throw an ikar?
In contrast to the typos that are external.
Yeah, so he thinks that there's like an ikar, right? There's like an ikar ratzon and a tafel ratzon that's not as significant. And harotza leilech b'tar shem etzos l'kayim fluke. I think it means the primary ratzon of a Jew who wants to be in good standing is to be mekayim fluke Torah. So he's not making an Alshich claim of this is the nature of the neshama. He's saying, look, just a Jew who wants to be Orthodox, wants to be observant, his main ratzon, right, like his primary commitment or his fundamental commitment is L'chaim Chukei Torah. I think it's a fair statement, right? What about the Ein Rotzei L'Gayrus Es Ishto? So what does he say about that? Raksha Taiva.
Raksha Taiva, Masha Libo, Parsha Shura, L'shal, V'lo Yukon, Masem Taiko, Es Pokos, Omri Yosai.
So notice here, he's setting it up. If Tani were here, he would talk about the Baal Tanya. But he's setting it up as the fight between a person's Iker Haratzon and their Taiva, right? Like their desires. Notice he also says L'sha. Like it's like a temporary obstruction created by the Taiva. And he calls it Kochos Chumriyosav. I think those are all ways of trying to say this is Tafel. These are Tafel things acting against your genuine Iker HaRatzon. I think that's clearly the picture you get from the Ars Sameach. To fit it into the models we've been developing, it is a distinction between...
intellectual.
Yeah, I think it's like the intellectual versus the desire-based parts of your mind. And then he says, Vanan Sadi, let's go on, Zacharia.
Vanan Sadi, Yachrid, Basar HaKrava, Basar HaGershin, Sameach Libol, Asha Kahuhu, Basar Mubeh, the kindness of the Shem.
What's he saying here?
That it's not just a temporary road sign. It's actually a really permanent assertion that we can claim confidence that he was happy about it, even afterwards.
Sameach libo al shekafu bezin lazeh v'yikayim. So what's this Anan Sadi? Where does that derive from? That derives from our analysis of the primacy of his intellectual commitment over his desires. Yeah. And Sameach Libo, the thought is that ultimately this guy, we think, is truly on board for what we forced him to do. As an empirical claim, Zev?
You're not understanding what I'm saying about that.
What's that?
Yeah. I thought but on Sadi, like him saying Rosani or give him again at the end of the day. Like that indicates that usually you God wanted it.
Well, he says Labasar Hahakrava Ubasar Hagershin.
Right, right.
After he's divorced.
Him doing after he does it, that indicates that he down wanted it. But But like it indicates his deep down desire,
I think he means that after it's accomplished, we have grounds to believe, or Anan Sadi, we know that he was happy with what he did.
It's like when you hear
Musar Shmuzim that usually say no one's ever regretted making more time for learning. I don't know. You ever hear Moshe Shmuel along those lines? What?
Never
heard someone say that. It's the you never heard a Moshe that starts like no one's ever regretted spending more time with their family. Like those types of things. She's like Anan Sadi that given his nature, this is something that he's gonna.
No one's ever regretted the force of LA.
When it's the right thing to do. That's the Anan Sadi.
No.
Do I agree with what he's saying?
Yeah, never regret doing the right thing.
I think it's controversial what he's saying, but first I'm just trying to understand. But I think that is what he's saying.
Yeah, right.
Right. I think the next thing is a little more controversial, but that's the thought, right? The thought is that he thinks that, given this guy's commitments, we know that he'll be happy with the result. Just he needs a little distance, right? You need to get him away from the decision-making process of like him hating his wife or whatever it is, or wanting to not divorce her or loving her too much. Give him a little distance and he'll be happy that he's Mekayim and Mitzvashem.
And I'm not sorry, is our analysis, like his prior analysis of the psychology.
Yeah. Yeah. Given that he wants to be a Jew, like we know that he'll be happy with this.
Why can't make a similar Anan Sadi that he's never going to break together? We're making assumptions on.
Well, this is saying, given human nature, given the fact that he's committed to Rotze Leos, Rotze Lelech B'Torah Hashem Mitzvosev, so hey, we're helping him achieve that.
So we had a big problem before about.
Here's let me give an example. Let's say you have a any of you guys, any of you go to like schools that prepped you for Ivy League colleges? Any of your parents, any of your parents aspire for you to go to an Ivy League college?
Yes.
Aspire. Once upon a time, they aspired for, before they knew about Chartu. They came around.
You don't even need college.
Right. So, you know, parents subject their kids to all sorts of terrible things for them to get into Penn and Columbia and Chicago, right? Ned, you once had aspirations for...
Yeah.
Yeah. Did your parents subject you to terrible things? Did you have to... No? It was easy.
I was subjected to terrible things, but regardless.
Right. So... The thought I take it usually is that the parents think like when you get into Columbia, you'll be like Anan Sadi, that you're going to be so happy that we made you play lacrosse and learn rowing and like all that stuff so that you could get into college. Even though like the 12 years of elementary school and high school were terrible because like you were tortured just to make sure that you get into this college. I think that's what he has in mind, right? It's like, so Sanan Sadi, we know that if you're kind of driven for this result of Chayolam Haba or Lakai Mitzvachem or Chazor, like, yeah, like right now, like maybe it's annoying for you to go and go to rowing practice. But hey, once you get that admissions letter, Sanan Sadi, that it's going to be Sameach Libcha that we got you to do this. I think that's what he has in mind. Now, you might say empirically, that's not true. But I think that's the suggestion. That metaphor help?
Personal.
What? A little personal? Yeah.
Why is that the bar that we're requiring?
Good question. Yeah, who cares? Just because someone's happy after the fact doesn't mean that they did it on their Ratzon HaKhofshi. So I agree. I think it's a problematic argument, right? He says, so read that phrase, Zeb, just take Anan Sadi, Dechi Yakriv. So pause for a second. Notice that it's Lebasar Hahakrava and Basar Hagerishin. So after the fact.
Right.
After it's all done. After he got into Columbia.
Yeah. They forced him to do the mitzvah.
Okay, so that Samach Baliba, etc. So Lachin Kiyama Rotzani.
Yeah. So
he's saying, oh, because of the Anan Sadi, that this guy is going to be happy after the fact. So we know, once he says Rotsani, that we kind of, he prevailed over his past, his desires. And he's doing this mitzvah, milev shalim umidas muchletas baratzon achavshi. Now, you might say that's a bad argument. How do you get from knowing that he'll be happy after the fact to knowing that he's doing it under his free will? Maybe the answer in the Columbia case is that the kid was coerced into going to Columbia against his will, but now he's happy. Right, but let's say the Anan Sadi is true. Let's say it's true. We know that he'll be happy. How do you get from, this was your point, Zeb, right? How do you get from knowing that he'll be happy to knowing that he's doing it on his own free will? People are happy all the time with things that were done against their free will. So what justifies Amir Simcha making this move? Benny?
It seems like the way the Or Sameach sees Ratzon is not a moment, not in the moment, not a desire, but as a long-term goal.
Okay.
So when you are Yisrael, your long-term goal is to do mitzvah and not do averos. It's not the moment that you want.
But then he's closer to the Alshef, which is just saying like this is the nature of a Jew to do, rather than something about what you genuinely want.
But
you're right. Maybe the answer is that he's connecting your being happy with it as like something that you would have chosen, something that you could have, like you would have chosen. Given that we know you'd want this thing, we could say that this is a course of action that you would have chosen, even though we chose it for you. Still a little mysterious, but
But it seems like Alshek is saying that in every Jew can have this, so whether you're believe you're religious, not religious.
Correct. That's just for sure a difference. Correct.
Here it's only one.
Yeah. Josh?
I think similar to that, maybe now like to differentiate a little bit between what we've seen before and other things. Like the fact that he says Lakhani Kama Rotan, you two Ashab Kimitsu Kakotav, your name on the thing is blocking the answer. But I think the idea there might be like the fact that Anan Sadi Sameha thing, that's about the inner Ratzon like we've seen before. But I think the point is when we're beating them up, this is now looking only at the not Bidikur Das, looking at the other thing, the Koach, meaning your Koach, whatever his word is.
Achumri.
Yeah. That is now being based on the beating, that is positive toward wanting to get divorced. And from the Anan Sadi that we're smashed after shows that now both your Koach and both your Ratzon right now. I think that's like the
interesting. It's like everything's aligned now.
Right. Like Anan Sadi about the Ratzon, and we know when you do that your Koach thing is just one out for you wanting to get divorced.
It's a nice way of thinking about it, maybe. Yeah, structurally that seems to be what he's trying to do in the piece, right? He's trying to explain why. We could say that we have Ratzon HaChafshi here, even in the case of the guy who would be Moser Nefesh, right, to never comply. Right, so you're saying you need two things, Agavon Tzigamer Machni, plus the fact that this is Ratzon HaChafshi. Plus the fact that it's he's happy about being Mekayim Mitzvah Hashem, et cetera, et cetera.
The Agavonis part might just be about the Kaputav HaChomer.
Maybe. I'm not totally sure about that, but I hear the suggestion. Let me just point out, then I'll take Yoni's hand. Udvarav Kedoshim Rugashim Believe of Kol Yisraeli. I think he's saying that about the Rambam. Is that empirically true? Think so? Well, yeah, does every Jew feel that deep down they want to do what's right?
Well, any card-carrying Jew.
Right. Anyone who's Rotz Elios Mi'Yisrael, do they want to do all the mitzvos? You think it's analytic to what it means to being a card-carrying Jew? Maybe.
What's it mean to be a part of Israel?
What does it mean to have a Israel?
You can't
be
a body.
To
be in a community, to live in a society, to go to
right. Go to
shul. Not get political here.
Right. That's. I'd say. Yeah. That was right. So it's an interesting question. How much Rotz Elios Mi'Yisrael? That's the mumar question is testing this, but what about something less than a mumar, right?
Well, presumably, someone who doesn't have positive thoughts to be like Shomer Torah Mitzvah wouldn't come back.
He's not Rotz, like a secular Jew or something.
Yeah.
Or a non observant Jew.
The reason why it matters is because he has positive thoughts to keep Mitzvah.
No, it's not that.
No. No, someone has positive thoughts.
The Al-Shif, I think it's the right. And the Rambam, with the qualification of Rotz Elios Mi'Yisrael, especially the Maritats, it sounds like it's case by case.
If he has positive thoughts to keep the Torah Mitzvah, the assumption is that he has positive thoughts in some way to divorce your deal with it.
Maybe. Yoni?
It seems like he's sort of like a little bit just more concerned about the result than actually how the guy gets there. So long as it's not based in our huge thing, a bunch of goons or forcing, like brutally forcing it, then as long as he has like a little bit of Ratz on, like
that's enough.
At the end of the day, it's there. If he wants to be a Rotz Elios Mi'Yisrael, then like that's enough. But we care about the bottom line, the result, which is that he divorces his wife in a way that's remotely like his Ratzon.
Right. That's minimal Ratzon. And by the way, we know that he's happy.
Yeah.
But like there's an Ansadi that he's happy.
Like, even the fact that he was happy afterwards, or an Ansadi that we can that we know that he can really be happy afterwards, like that's enough for us. But he's not happy. So we should end the divorce.
If we know that he's not happy.
Yeah.
Interesting question. So let's say he chucks it right afterwards. Right.
Well, that's not possible.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry.
Yes. He's saying we know that every eventually he'll be happy. Okay. There's a lot of finessing to make that work, but maybe. So look, I think we need to figure out more about what Ramir Simcha is trying to do. Josh, you still like Ramir Simcha or? You think that we need to have mind?
That section
as if I had his questions on before that bothered me a little bit. I think about your first section of Porta Mari Tas, and then
it's what?
First section was just Porta Mari Tas.
Right.
The second section was a little
difficult.
Difficult. And then the last section kind of sounds like a Rambam.
Yeah, you're trying to explain that Rambam.
Yeah.
So I think we need to put a little more thought into exactly what Rameir Simcha is trying to do here and how the different pieces fall together. Blah, blah, blah. Second.
Put it into ChatGPT.
What's that?
I'll put it into ChatGPT.
Like, what exactly is Rameir Simcha trying to do here? Okay, so we're gonna think a little more about this Rameir Simcha. I want to move us now to page 22. And I want to introduce the section on different types of kfiyah. So far, we've been talking about different types of ratzon. That there are different ways of extracting the husband's consent for the gerushin. Kofanos achim rotzani, agavon singam ramachni has one version of that. Mitzvah shema d'rei chachamim has a different version of that. The Al Sheikh, every Jew really is programmed to do what's good, etc. But related to this, you also see that in coercing a get, the halacha seems to care what type of coercion it is. Now that is very strange. Why should the type of coercion matter for determining whether the get is kosher? You might say, look, what matters is whether it was coerced. Why do we distinguish between different methods of coercion? Again, this really only matters in the case of kfiyah shelo kedin. In the case of kfiyah kedin, all coercion is okay. So let's start here on page 22 for a second. Let's just start with the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kuf Nandalet, Sivcha Paler. So let's get a volunteer to take us to who prepared the Shpeni? You prepared the Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah.
All right, Kol Yilu Shomru. What does that mean?
Anyone who is debating decided that he needs to get divorced, you're allowed to report them, even with whips.
Yeah. So this is referring to all the cases where the Mishnah says that he has to divorce his wife. The din is going to be kope even bishotim. So that means what type of coercion? Physical coercion. Okay, baseball bat.
Are they
up? Well?
Are they up? Are they bad?
What does that mean? What's the... Let's hurry back. Just hear that. Okay. So the V'yesh Omim in the Gemara distinguishes between different types of cases. So that's what's the Vishom Benny? Shkol Mishal Enemar of Gemara. Benny? Good. So what does that mean?
So there's a Machok and another side says only if the Beijing tells you that you have to be Kofim Lotzi, if they use the word Kofim.
Or not the Bezdin, but the Gemara.
Gemara, sorry.
Right, when the Gemara prescribed for divorce, did the Gemara say Kofin Lahotzi, or did the Gemara just say Yotzi? And so we have to be sensitive to these linguistic differences in the Gemara. If the Gemara says Yotzi, then physical kfiyah is not justified. But you could attempt to shame the person with this verbal assault, where you say Chachamim Chiyavucha Lahotzi V'Amlosotzi Mutlekros Chavarian. That maybe that's not even kfiya, right? Maybe that's just a moral assessment that you're a bad person for. So maybe that's not even kfiya. But what's interesting is the Rama Haga. Okay, so we should be machmir and only be kofa b'shotim in cases where the Gemara says kofa mehotzi, but not in lesser cases. Okay, but chol makom she'en, here's the chol makom.
Chol makom she'en kofa b'shotim, ein meladim ato gam kei.
So if you can't do physical coercion, then you can't put the guy in cheirim either. Nidoi is like, no one's allowed to do business with him. He's not allowed to get an aliyah. He doesn't count for a mezumin. He has to let his hair grow long, like he has dinim of avelos. This is the dinim of Nidoi.
That's okay. More than harem, right? Like he can't be.
Yeah, it's very strict rules that come out from Hefes Nedarim. So if you can't do physical coercion, you can't do Nidoi either. Ask the Mordechai. Mikol makom.
Mikol makom. Mikol mitzvah kol yisrael shelo lasot lo shum tova ol isa liten imo olamo v'no banav ol mikovro. Basically, Beit Din has the power to do any sort of gzeir on him, not to do him any favors, not to...
good.
Marry with him, not to...
Yeah, not to do business with him,
business.
Not to do him any favors. Not to allow a mohel to give his kids a bris mila, and not to bury him until he divorces his wife. So the question is, forget about the distinction right now between nidui and these harchakos. Right, we'll talk about that. But what's the distinction between physical coercion and social coercion? Right, you might, like, why is one considered valid and the other invalid? So if the point is that a get can't be given under duress, why do you care whether the duress is prompted by the guy wanting physical pain to cease or the guy wanting to be socially accepted in his community, to have his kids have a bris mila, to be able to do business with his friends and peers? Ned?
Yeah, that's by not having to do with the control of fear. It might just be limitation from victims and power.
What?
You want to restrict their,
Yeah, that's something I was wondering.
So, Winston, so you're saying that in principle, kfiyah is okay in these cases?
Yes, we don't want statements to go around hitting everyone.
Yeah, but look at the previous line in the Shulchan Aruch that I'm highlighting now, where it's the Tur B'Shem HaRash. Kibin Nika Plukta Darabusa, Roy La'achmir Shalo Lachot Peshut, Dim Shalaya Gemusa. It sounds like it's not just about restricting the powers of Beis Din. It's about ensuring that the get is given right, validly, and that it's not a coerced get.
You can't get loose with it. The Gemara said get loose kasher, right? It's still get considered to get loose with
it. But these would be shalok kedim because the Gemara never provides for kfiya in these cases. It just says, doesn't say kofen lahotzi, it just says yotzi, like the yotzi v'eating suva cases. So I'm just asking, given that there's some sort of duress going on here, why is the non-physical duress substantively different from the physical one? Ned's trying to give an answer about that. This is about how laissez-faire Jewish society should be in general. But from the Shulchan Aruch, you get the sense that this is about whether it's a get meusa, whether the get is considered coerced or not coerced. Do you see my response, Ned?
Yeah.
Josh?
So there's a fundamental difference between the two things. When you're hitting him with sticks, like, meaning you got him grabbed right there, and there's nothing he can do. Like, either, you know, you...
It's acute.
Yeah, but meaning he can't do anything. Whereas these other cases, like the social stuff, there he has other options available to him as husbands. Like, meaning he can apply to America and...
Good. So this gets to the question, the main question of this whole sugya, which is when is something done volitionally versus under duress? And your point is that when someone's under acute pain, so their action is less volitional, given how much the pain leaves them with no alternative path. Right. It's just pain or get. Whereas you're suggesting in the case of the social coercion in the Shulchan Aruch of Nundalid, there he has multiple paths open to him, right? Just one involves less business opportunities, moving away from this community, maybe. So he has more paths open to him, which don't involve divorcing his wife. And so it's considered not non-coercion or less coercion, because he has more bechira. That's a really interesting suggestion that Josh is making. Did I see that? So we're distinguishing between different types of kfiya on the basis of how many courses of action are still available to him that don't involve gerushin. Yeah. Is that?
I mean, let's say like she's living.
Eitan, do you have a hand also? Yeah. Eitan next.
Yeah, let's say she's like living in the shtetl in Europe and or in Russia or whatever, and there's basically the only option is be part of this community or go out into the wilderness and doesn't really have any other option. So would that be to say, like, in that case, is that like then become a cute settlement?
Josh, what would you say in that case? I think the answer is like, no, it's still a viable option to be outcast from your community. Just be a hermit.
Yeah, I mean,
at least you have the option. In the case of social course, you have the option of being a hermit. Whereas in the Kofim Bishotim case, you don't have the option of being a hermit.
One more option.
Yeah, at least one more path available. But you might say that's what's crucial.
Oh.
Because in Kofim Oso Bishotim, Achim Rotzani, like wherever you go, we'll hunt you down.
Right.
It's like every time the U.S. kills like an ISIS general or whatever it's like, this shows you that the arm of the United States, you know, will follow you wherever you go, and for, you know, even over a decade. And so that was like, you have no choice but to give it a yet. Whereas, you can be a hermit, and we'll let you be a hermit. But if you want to join our community, then you got to give it a yet. So there's at least one path of non-Gerush and open to him. That's a big chiddush, because it gives us like a very tangible way of thinking about Bechira. Something is undertaken freely or more freely based on how many paths of viable action is available. Josh, that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very nice. It's a very nice suggestion. Hey, Tanya, have a thought on this?
True for Josh later, we see, but it's not what they say, that we don't need to come away before you get this moment. Because he has the option to continue paying it.
Yeah.
For the other thing.
Good.
Like a shua, he doesn't have any option.
Good. Yes, well, I want to look at those cases also. All the cases where we say this is not the rest because of the paths open to him, right? So maybe the right thing to say here, so Josh, in your view, do you want to say that it's not considered kvia? Or is your thought that this is kvia, but it's less of a problematic kvia?
I feel like those are basically the same as saying that. Like, however you want to define it, either you make a chilek between different types of kvia, or this isn't kvia, but either way, It's not something that, you know, we use contrary to his resume.
Okay. Let's look quickly at page 23, the Tshuva of the Ma'arik. This is partially what we just saw cited in the Shulchan Aruch. This is a very famous Tshuva citing Rabbeinu Tam. This is nowadays, whenever someone doesn't give it a wife or get, everyone relies on this Ma'arik. Like all the Ora. Josh, didn't you work for Ora briefly?
Briefly.
Briefly.
Let's croak the...
Well,
those pro shooting, they weren't having
it. Yeah, they're not into it. They're in because they won't do kfiya b'shutim, but everyone's into these harchakos or being a tam. That's the
too late
for you. So this all comes from this Ma'arik citing the Tshuva Rabbeinu Tam. Let's just read it very quickly. Top of 23. He cites Rabbeinu Tam asher sham harich lesser hakfiya b'tainazu. This is about Tainas Masalai. Remember Tainas Masalai? Rambam's view that if the wife just says she's repulsed by her husband, then it would be kofa lagarish. So Rabbeinu Tam comes out adamantly against the Rambam and says, if you force somebody to give a get for tanis ma'asala, you've created mamzerim, because that's again melusa shalokadin, etc., etc. And Rabbeinu Tam wrote about that, ach kol rab usenu shavu bidavar, that even in a case where you cannot be kofa with sticks for physical coercion, tigzru ba'ala chamura kol ish, So Rina Tom says, hey, I'm totally opposed to physical coercion, but this type of social distancing, our chokas Rabbeinu Tam, not eating with him, not visiting him when he's sick, not doing business with him, not allowing him to make money, that's all permissible. What's the key word here? Yeah. This is not considered kfiya on Rabbeinu Tam's perspective. She'im yirtze yimtzo v'amakom v'hu lo yilke begufo mitoch nidoi zeh. That's Rabbeinu Tam. So the thought is that this is not really coercion. because we're just going to separate ourselves from him. There's no obligation to embrace everybody as a brother, as a friend. You don't have to do business with everyone. So you're not coercing him in that case. And Rabbeinu Tam thinks that's kosher. So in Rabbeinu Tam's view, there is a clear distinction between coercion, that's kfiyah b'shotim, and this other thing called tarchakos, which doesn't even count as kfiyah, even though it gives the Baal reasons to want to comply with the Bezdin's will. Is that about the last word on this?
Notice
by the last line here in the Ma'arik, he cites it. Afilo hachi kasav sheicholam ligzar li badel mimenu ulaharchiko b'chol mine richok she'en zakari kfiya. And Ma'arik himself, when he sums this up, says this doesn't count as coercion. But go ahead, though.
The same case where you can't do Yudin, you also can't do Yidot.
Yes.
So yeah, you can't do these. Like you can do these, like not Arhakos. Official Arhakos, but you don't.
We have to figure out. We'll look at the Mordechai, which is the source for not doing Nidoi. We want to figure out why that's different. Okay. Why is Nidoi similar to Kfiyah B'Shutim? So for next year, I want to discuss this greater length. Look at the discussion in Siman Kuf Lamed Daled on the next page about a shvua ligaresh, where a person swears that they'll divorce their wife, so self-imposed onus. Look at the case of a knas ligaresh. The guy agrees to a penalty, a financial penalty, for not divorcing his wife. Is that considered duress? And the discussion of threatening to harm somebody's relatives if they don't give a get. And also the discussion of jail, putting somebody in jail until they give a get. That's all in the latter half of the Makoro sheet. All right, shkayach, everyone.
So if we let this guy move away and we just give his hair, what happens to the woman?
She's the...